Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 108.
This week on the podcast, the New York Times editor ouster shows a surprising lack of media strategy at the paper of record.
And neurologist Carl Rove has a new medical theory that fake concussions can amount to serious brain damage when it comes to political rivals.
Republicans show an increasingly marginal grasp on cause and effect in their choice to block VA funding, then be furious about poor veterans care.
We're going to investigate Benghazi again, this time focusing on the, quote, beginning, middle, and end.
Improbably, somebody with the name Butch Otter is the least ridiculous person at the Idaho GOP gubernatorial debates.
And Rush Limbaugh fashions himself a Revolutionary War hero and wins the hearts and minds of fake children everywhere.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us again, finally, yes, on the web at www.braintrustlive.com. We're back.
And here. You can find us here.
You can find us here in Los Angeles,
because
where
here
we are.
Yes.
Yeah, it's
been so long. We're all on the mainland now.
We have never taken a hiatus that long.
No, I know.
In our 2-year history.
2 years.
Which I think is pretty impressive.
I do too.
I felt we were owed a vacation at a certain point.
Yeah, sure.
It's like, why not?
I mean, everybody goes on hiatus.
Exactly. We don't have sponsors to please.
No,
we can do anything we want.
And while we do report the news, we hope that you're not getting your news
all
from
of
us.
Your news from us,
because that would be a mistake for a lot of reasons.
One being that we're not going to report on Boko Haram today.
Oh, I know. You know, we have so many things to talk about, and it's not that that wasn't one of the biggest stories, but it's sort of like two weeks old, and we're not trying to report on, like, the last month, and it just sort of, like, didn't fall with what some of the other... We don't have a great excuse.
We don't
we're
have
just
a
not
great excuse.
It.
We're just... Of the stories that we had to think of the last 2 weeks that we wanted to talk about,
right,
that just wasn't one that we were interested in talking about.
And we're only telling you because...
We want you to think we're not stupid.
Right. Stupid and insensitive.
And so, right, yes.
Right.
Right. We know what happened. We recommend, like, that you read it in the newspaper like we did.
Right.
Because we're not going to talk about
right.
it.
Right.
What we are going to talk about obsessively, because we love a good scandal, is Jill Abramson's firing from the New York Times.
Oh, my God.
This has been quite the controversy.
I know.
It's been going on. I mean, the controversy is now a week old, but it's been fascinating every step of the way.
Yes.
Because it's sort of like an evolving story. And I posted earlier in the week, or maybe last week, an article about... the sort of dangers of doing poor rumor control.
Yes.
Because I wanted to point out my own genius.
right.
Because years ago,
it was self-serving.
It was self-serving entirely.
But it was
the only thing I posted while Brett was gone, and it was just
posted,
a self-serving.
You posted a tiny horse in a sinkhole.
Oh, yeah, no, that was an important story.
Right.
That's, you don't want to mess around with tiny horses and tiny sinkholes. Hilarious.
Yeah.
In any case, I wrote a piece for HuffPo a while ago that was related to an issue that was happening on the block that I grew up on. And I was talking about sort of leaving a vacuum when for a rumor.
Right.
So when politicians or any public figure does something controversial and then doesn't address it, basically you're just inviting the public to, like, come up with crazy theories about what happened and then spread them as if they're fact, because there's no information to combat what they say. So, like, why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
And it's only in your interest to have them not do that. It's not in their interest to not do that. Like, people don't want to not gossip. Gossiping is so much fun. Hello.
So,
in any case, Jill Abramson was fired from the New York Times. They had apparently been having issues with her for a while. Politico had been reporting on that for a while, although Washington Post also sort of was quick to point out that there was a lot of change going on at the Times while she was there, including things like masthead trimming, having to move to sort of video storytelling a lot. You know, they were trying to do a lot more digital stuff, a lot of stuff on the blogs there. So, like, there were some pretty massive changes that involved fewer people having well-paying jobs at the Times.
Yes,
so it was a controversial time regardless, and so she may have been, in part, a bit of a scapegoat in terms of that. But what happened was, the way that they announced it was they called all of their editors in at, like, 2 p.m. on, like, a random day, and then she wasn't there, and they just, like, announced that there was a new executive editor.
Right.
And introduced him and then had him speak. But they never, like, in any way, like, addressed her. They were just like, they said something about her, like, management style, or them bringing in a new management style.
Yes.
Which was sort of...
And didn't you say they also said to the employees, like, it may come as
they acted like it
you,
may, that we've been having issues with her. And a lot of the employees felt that it had come as a bit of a surprise to them.
Right.
It certainly came as a bit of a surprise to everyone else.
Right.
Because unless, I guess, you were reading Politico a year ago, there was not really any indication that this was coming if you were just, like, a random news reader. But it started a rumor train because they did terrible damage control because they apparently, as the media, don't understand good PR. So Arthur Sulzberger, who is the publisher, released this statement that went on for like a lot of time about, you know, her, you know, having arbitrary decision-making issues and failing to consult her colleagues. And people were complaining she was like assigning stories to editors and things like that. And like, ultimately, no one knows whether this was motivated by gender or not, obviously. Right. But that was everyone's first thought because she was the first female editor of the Times.
Right.
And the language that they used to describe why she was being fired was kind of coded.
It was very... It was. It certainly was. And that is where I think... It was so funny, too, because, like, they didn't even... By the time that they sort of released this statement, we were already talking about whether it was gender related or not because the first thing that filled the rumor vacuum was a rumor that it was overpay.
Exactly.
Was that she had asked to be paid fairly and that's why she got let go.
Yeah.
She never even herself said that. It was just initially reported that that was the case.
She hasn't said a word.
No, she has had
which
to.
Which is genius.
Genius.
That's the best move.
The only
for
thing
her.
That she's done is I think her daughter posted that
picture of her in
boxing gloves.
Right after she fired. Well, and she had the thing that she did do, which is not saying anything, but is not saying anything, is they had tried to offer to have her step down in a sort of quiet way, and she refused to go that way.
Yeah.
So she made them fire her.
Which good for her.
Good for her. Because she obviously didn't agree that the firing was warranted, so she didn't have any incentive to like make it look like it was her idea.
Yeah.
But in any case, so the first rumor that fills the vacuum, because this was such a sudden move, is about equal pay.
Yeah.
And then they release a thing, you know, where they were like, well, she was actually being paid 10% higher than Bill Keller, who was her predecessor. But they didn't talk about any of the sort of like other compensation that people get. So they didn't talk about like her pension package or anything. So they still left the rumor half complete. They didn't fill in all the facts that they needed to.
No.
So people are still talking about that. And then on top of that, when they did the damage control, they sort of like used an amount of coded language to sort of describe. They Hillary'd her.
They did.
They were trying to describe her as basically like a hysterical woman.
Right.
So that people would be like, a hysterical woman.
She was abrasive. Oh my God.
No, an abrasive woman?
Yeah.
How dare she?
Yeah.
Well, and the thing that, you know, Brent and I were talking about this a little bit earlier, they may not have even realized if they were making a sexist decision in the newsroom. You know, this was a decision that was basically made by all men anyway. So they probably used all of this coded language on each other. And they were like, yes, she is abrasive. I'm so glad that you see that, too, because I see that. And they were all like, it's because she's abrasive that we just... And it never sort of, like, would have even occurred to them.
Right.
So the most interesting...
Well, it's like you said, I said, that's basically code for a bitch.
Yeah.
And you said, that's basically code for that she was PMSing.
Exactly.
Which it is.
It is. And the thing that I think, you know, we don't know whether this was gender motivated, and it may not have been. This has all been a big blowout because the Times was so poor at doing damage control. So everyone, including us, because we love to come up with a crazy theory, has come up with crazy theories. I read this really interesting piece in New York Magazine, though, that sort of pointed out to what the real problem here is, which is that she will never know if she was fired because she was a woman or not. And that's a problem that women in senior positions generally face. There are often only a few of them. And when they get fired, they never can really know if it's about gender or not, because a lot of the things that we expect out of women in the workplace are gender related. So, you know, we expect women to act a certain way in the workplace, and most of the people that make the decisions about hiring and firing executive level women are men.
Right.
They're all in a sort of boys club. You know, the media world is not sort of like these traditional papers are not just like filled to the brim with female editors.
No.
There's not that many of them. And a lot of them were saying that they were sorry about this because they were losing a mentor in the process because they had never had like a sort of executive level female mentor in that, you know, at
the
time.
Well, she'd been at the paper she'd been around for a long time. I mean, she's 60. She was the Washington bureau chief for a long time. I mean, like she's well regarded, obviously.
No, exactly.
I mean, it's not as if she was just some schmo. I mean, you know, it's like.
But so this sort of like bigger kind of controversy here is more a point about the fact that, like, as a woman, even if you do make it, if you get fired, you never can really know what the issue was.
Right.
And that, at a, you know, she may feel like there were failings, but you never know whether those failings would have actually ousted a man.
A man, exactly.
You just can't know. They did replace her with the first African-American executive editor that the Times has ever had, so they're really trying to stem the controversy by getting being as diverse as they can, I guess. I mean, he's also a bureau chief, I think. Or, no, he's the managing editor there.
Okay.
So he's well-regarded as well.
Yeah.
I don't know what it means in terms of the Times direction. She was very into the sort of, like, digital development of the times, and I don't know if this is, if he's more sort of like a traditional newsman or is sort of going to continue continue to develop those things.
If he doesn't, he's a dummy. I mean, correct. I don't know how that was going for her because I haven't been following what's going on at the Times.
No, the Times blogs. I love the Times blogs. But I may be the only one. I don't know. P.S. Speaking of blogs, I'm obsessed with New York Magazine's Science of Us blog.
Oh, this I think you told me about that. Yeah,
it's all really short, really incomplete discussions of random facts that are fun to know.
That's, I like that.
Like, you know, like, I can't even, I mean, they just sort of like will come up with a question that is the kind of question you would never think to think about.
Yeah.
And then answer it for you. Like, what is 7 hours of sleep do to, you know, more interesting than that. I didn't do that service. But in any case, I recommend reading it.
All right. Great.
But so, speaking of people being Hillary'd.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton is also being Hillary'd. And you know we're not fans of hers. But there have been, there's been this sort of like weird discussion going on because, and this is like what you said the Sunday shows have been talking about.
Oh, this was, well, and it sort of surprised me too because like, and I actually initially was like, well, let's talk about this first and then sort of like went over the facts and I was like, well, I don't really know.
It's not much of a story.
Not that interesting. But everybody's been blowing out about this because it is sort of like politically salacious.
Yes.
But Karl Rove earlier this week sort of like set off a whole thing where like Page Six reported and like
you know the big political reporting that goes on in Page Six.
And then everybody picked it up and like, you know, had a spiraled out of control.
Right.
But he said that Hillary Clinton she may have brain damage. Because Dr. Rove can see the signs of brain damage.
Yes, of course.
And she's got it.
Yeah. Because she had a health episode, as you might remember, like last year that she fell.
Mm-hmm.
And so, instead of terming it in a more sort of, in a less salacious manner, he decided to term it brain damage.
Brain damage, uh-huh.
Which obviously got him a lot of press attention, which is what he was aiming
That's
for.
That's what he was looking for.
Right. The sort of larger point that he was making in the most insensitive manner
that he claims to be making.
Right, that he claims to have been making, is a point that other people have made, which is about Hillary Clinton's age, because she is quite old to run for president.
Right.
And that point, I think, is a fair point.
Sure.
We talked about it
when John McCain was running for president.
Exactly.
So I think he was like 3 or 4 years older than she will be. But I mean, like, you know, if somebody thinks she's too old, then that's fair.
I just feel like you got to be careful in a world in which we had a president with Alzheimer's that was like sitting in office, having all of his facilities.
Well, and she is the same age, I think, as he was when he was first elected.
Exactly.
Or will be.
Yeah, she will be when.
Yeah.
So that's why this discussion is coming up.
Yeah.
And it's a fair discussion to have, I think. I don't see it as a discussion that, I mean, I see it coming from the Republicans, it's a discussion they're only having because she's a woman, because they're just coming up with ideas of things they can talk about.
Uh-huh.
Coming from Democrats, I think it's a fair discussion because you just don't want your president to be like a million years old, because you just don't want to have another Reagan in your life, you know?
Yeah.
You're just not trying to do that. And like John McCain like was too old to be president. There was not much of a chance that that man was going to make it through two terms. Because it ages you to be president. We've seen it with every president.
Yeah.
And he was already aged.
Right.
Aged. So, but this is a sort of tactic that the Republicans are using to attack Hillary before she declares so that they can sort of force her out of the running.
Right.
I wish that they were not the ones doing it. Or that no one, that we were coming up with better ways to keep her out of the running.
Well, and that's what I think too. I think on some level, I understand where they're going with this, but I think that to a degree, something like this sort of continues to just delegitimize Karl Rove.
Which just feels cheap.
It just feels really cheap, and there are other things to say. There are reasons that we have been saying. There are certainly reasons that Republicans have been
saying.
And I just think that it cheapens the whole thing, because like if you're Karl Rove and you want to talk about why Hillary Clinton shouldn't be president, obviously
brain damage is not the word
to use. You're speaking specifically to Republicans. There's 100 things that you could think of.
Like and all of the things.
They'll think of them at some point, but like think of those first. Think of this last. Like when you're sort of like grasping.
The GOP grasping that's been going on. And I mean, that's everyone's response to this was like, you know, Claire McCaskill said it was a cheap political shot. Dianne Feinstein said it was pathetic. Like, no one is thinking that this was a smart strategy.
Well, I saw that interview with Claire McCaskill, actually, and she also said, she was like, you know, this is a woman, or this is a man who, you know, had millions and millions of dollars of people money and was an abject failure in the last election.
Yeah.
So I think that's the way to, I mean, if
Karl
Rove is easier to delegitimize than Hillary Clinton is easier to delegitimize.
And Bill Clinton had a pretty great response.
He
said, That embodies that old saying that consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. Mm-hmm. First they said she faked her concussion, and now they say she's auditioning for a part in The Walking Dead.
Right, which is sort of funny. Which I think he's confused sort of about what The Walking Dead is, but
possibly.
Regardless.
Regardless of that. Well, it's a good point that when she got the concussion, they were all like, ah, she's faking
it. Well, because it was around the time that she was supposed to be speaking to the, you know, Senate panel or whatever about Benghazi, so it was faked,
it was
obviously.
Faked. And it was about Benghazi, as you might imagine all things are.
Right.
So now, apparently, we're all on board with her health problems so much that we believe she's not fit to be president.
Right.
The other big news story of the last week is this really boring VA scandal that's going on.
Yeah.
I hate when there's a scandal like this because it makes everyone makes comments to the press that are dumb. And it's an issue that I think, ultimately, everyone could agree on. It's one of the issues that I think that, like, Tea Partiers and the far left could both agree on,
right,
if everyone wasn't being so dumb.
Well, but, like, and it comes as sort
everyone
of like
just gets
one of the,
dumb when these things happen. Everyone
does get dumb when these things happen. But basically what happened is that we've sort of got word that, you know, we've sort of known for months that there have been issues with the VA, probably for longer than that. But it's been being reported, not necessarily widely, but it just came out that specifically in the Phoenix area that something like 40 people died, like, while they were waiting for care that they ended up not getting in the VA system in that area.
Yeah.
So it was a huge, you know, media
And there was this, like,
blowout,
wait
basically.
List. This, like,
right.
secret
like, this
wait
secret
list.
Wait list. So it had all the important parts of a scandal.
There was
there were secrets, there were cover-ups, there were, like, people falsifying documents to show that people weren't waiting, and all of, you know, deaths.
Because the VA has this, like, mandate to provide care for people, so they were coming up with all sorts of clever ways
to make it seem like
they were, providing the care, but they were overburdened, and so they were not.
Right, exactly. So, Eric Shinseki, who is runs the VA,
he's
the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. He sort of was the first one in hot water over this, probably rightly, I would suppose. I mean, he'd be who you'd look to.
Right.
So, and he, everybody is mad about this. It's still sort of early in the game. I don't really think anybody sort of knows specifically what happened here. There's going to be a report that's going to come out later, and his undersecretary has resigned, and, you know, it's...
Well, and the undersecretary is the one that's sort of, like, been the fall guy for this, because everyone's calling for Shinseki's resignation, as everyone always does in a situation like this.
Right.
And so they had his undersecretary resign. No one's really sure if he was actually responsible for what happened.
Right.
I think Shinseki is, or the director of the Phoenix VA is on administrative leave.
Oh, yeah.
And...
She was put on leave, I think, almost immediately.
She was put on leave immediately, and Shinseki is sort of, like, in this weird waiting game, I think, because everyone's obsessively calling for him to resign, but no one knows, but that everyone around him is now resigning. It's, like, hard to know.
And they're also sort of, like, you know, the top Republicans are also sort of now, they're over Shinseki, because they're busy blaming the president about it, so Shinseki is sort of dodging some of the fire, because they're, you know, Eric Cantor and Mitch McConnell both had released statements this week that they, you know, the president is going to have to answer for this, and blah, 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 and I think, like you just said, I think this is something that everybody can get, you know, can get angry about, and I think probably rightly, but in what makes it the most sort of disingenuous scandal is that the Republicans have been...
Steadily blocking any funding for the VA.
Right. There was just as recently as February, there was a $21 billion bill that was authored by my life hero, Bernie Sanders. Oh, I just got a Bernie Sanders for President 2016 t-shirt. I bought
online. How did I get that?
You can buy it.
Oh, I can buy it. Okay.
So, just got here this week. I'm going to wear it. I'm excited. Yeah. I've been trying to figure out the best time.
When
do I wear it? Yeah.
A day that you're going to face the most people that would be pissed off.
But that would have sort of, that would have expanded people's access and given them better care to the VA.
The VA just needs money.
The VA needs money, and it needs more access to services because, or I mean, you know, for people to have access to their services. Because
broadened services for people that...
Because what people don't realize, I think, is that, you know, there's all of these Vietnam vets who are now sort of, you know, they're the baby boomers.
There's like a zillion
they're old
Vietnam vets.
So they need more care than they have previously needed. And we now have all of these young vets who are coming back, and they're getting treated for various things.
It's like a fucking shitstorm of veterans
right now. It's
like
veterans need care more than they ever have recently, right now. And that's because, you know, when you send them to shit wars, like the three that we just named, right. then you have to treat them when they
exactly.
come back.
That's
a problem. It's not a problem. I mean, because we could do that for them.
Right.
And we could do that if we just would have passed this bill. But it's a problem in the sense that, you know, once you have more veterans that need care, then you have to fund it.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's the GOP loves to send people to war and then not take care of them on the other end.
Yeah, it's a classic maneuver.
It's a classic maneuver of theirs.
Yeah.
And this is...
Well, they're not going to vote for a spending bill in an election year.
No. God forbid.
But they'll get angry when a bunch of people die.
Exactly. And they'll blame the president, who somehow is supposed to be responsible for the money that they couldn't allocate to the VA, something.
Right.
Like, it's disingenuous in the way that has often been disingenuous for them. I think this is sort of interesting because it shows the degree to which war and military issues have really become a strong point for the Democrats over the Republicans in a sort of interesting way. Because being, like, a patriotic, like, military lover was, like, owned by the GOP for most of the last, like, two decades. I mean,
yeah.
longer, but, like, yeah. especially for the last few wars that we've been in. And even under Clinton and, you know, sort of, like, early years when we weren't really at war, like, the GOP has sort of owned the idea of being patriotic by supporting
yeah.
the military. And in the last few years, they have gotten so wound up in their craziness and their inability to spend a single
yep.
dime. They used to love to spend money just on weird shit.
Yeah.
They loved to spend money on war. They loved to spend money on equipment mm-hmm. for war. You know, they loved doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Now that we're not at war and they can't allocate for anything fun that, you know, benefits their friends
yeah.
and business, they... have suddenly abandoned veterans entirely, and that was even the case in the last election cycle. I mean, Obama and Romney.
Oh yeah.
Obama looked like a fucking military man compared to Romney because
Romney got all that flack because he didn't mention the veterans in his speech
yeah,
at the
like
RNC
rookie,
convention.
Rookie mistake.
Yeah.
But so it's sort of interesting to see how these veterans affairs issues
yeah.
sort of take even more wind out of their sails because
yeah.
they really have no interest in veterans. They never have, obviously.
Yeah.
But veteran care was one of the few sort of like socialized services.
Yeah.
And I use the term socialized
yeah.
well, in a very sort of broad sense
yeah.
That they could sort of like get behind. And now they're sort of even pulling back
right.
from that.
Well, and that's the thing. And I think in a related issue, and I was telling you about this earlier, I was having a conversation with someone who I work with about this, who's a Republican, who's, you know, you can usually have a normal, rational
right.
conversation with, and he was talking about this, and he was going on, and it's terrible, and I was agreeing with him,
right.
and then he sort of brought out the, this is what we can look forward to when the government takes over our healthcare, and I was like, I want you to stop,
right
there, because
this is what we have.
This is, I'm not... saying this as an excuse for the VA.
No.
But this is what insurance companies have been doing for years,
yeah.
is not providing people with care.
This
it doesn't have anything to do with the government taking over the VA.
No.
I mean, the government runs the
right.
VA. But I mean, it doesn't have anything
to do with the fact that
the government runs
no.
the VA. It has to do with, that's how Medicare works, or not Medicare, medical care, healthcare
right.
works. I mean, like there is, whether it's the government or it's insurance companies, I mean, we have that. Now.
Yeah, that's the system
we're using right now.
The system of not having
we
care.
We should fix that system.
Yeah.
But it's...
It's not the government's fault that this is... it's the government's fault broadly.
Right.
It's not the fault of the service being provided by the government.
Right.
It's the fault of the government not being willing to fund the service.
Correct.
And the government, because it doesn't fund the service at all for the regular people, and barely funds it even under Obamacare...
Right.
has been providing this shitty service to everyone for years
right,
by not providing any service.
Right, yeah, exactly.
And if you thought maybe people were not talking about Benghazi this week,
yeah, boy.
You'd be wrong because it's all anyone was talking about. Because now, if we haven't already done enough looking into Benghazi, now
yeah.
we have a committee happening in the House that's
yeah.
going to do further looking into Benghazi.
There's another select committee that basically the crazy Republicans had to talk John Boehner into this, basically. They've been pestering to him to do this. You know, for years, really,
right.
since like 2012,
yeah.
when it happened. But they've already had all of these, you know, Daryl.
They've
Issa
done a lot of looking
into
this.
They've been looking
right.
for a while, looking hard.
Fortunately, Boehner loves wasting time.
Yes.
So this is a favorite.
Yes.
A favorite plan of his.
Yes. But so there's this new committee. It's being headed by Trey Gowdy, who is. Just skeezy looking, by the way. I don't know if you've seen pictures
yes.
of him, but he's crazy looking.
It's not
but anyway,
the guy that you'd want
of course,
to hang out with.
It's supposed to be bipartisan, but it's not. It's 7-5, and the
right.
Republicans sort of think that since they run the House, they can have more people on it. So the Democrats have been pissed about that. They've talked about maybe just doing like a general boycott of it, but like that's a little dicey, just because you sort of want to have some voices on there. I read something the other day that Alan Grayson has claimed that he wants to be on it, and, like, has already talked to Nancy Pelosi about it, and I think that is the way to go.
Yeah.
Here. Like,
Put only Alan Grayson's on it.
Drudge up the five Alan Graysons of the world. Like, the five nuttiest people you got,
mm-hmm.
who are still geniuses.
Exactly.
And throw them on there. Like, yeah. Bring out the crazies.
Yeah. No, that's... I am sort of partial to them boycotting it, because I feel like there is literally no legitimacy to any findings of a committee that has only seven crazy Republicans on it.
Sure.
Like, they could just be talking to... like, at that point, they're just, like, talking to the ether. Like, they're not even...
That's true.
There's not even, like, anyone listening to that committee.
Yeah.
But I feel like if they're going to participate, it's at their own peril, A. But they should really, like, yeah. go for it.
Yeah.
They should participate up a storm.
Yeah.
It should be the most participation anyone has ever witnessed from five Democrats on a committee that's yeah. 7-5. Because I feel like this issue is never going to go away. It's not a real right. issue. It's a fake scandal yeah. already. They yeah. know that going in. There's right. like literally nothing new to learn about it. And no one can find anything controversial enough.
Well, and that's the thing that is sort of like making even, you know, there's an interesting article in the Daily Beast that is sort of making Republicans a little uneasy about this, too, and why sort of John Boehner didn't really want to do this in the first place. I think yeah. the thing that sort of, like, finally pushed him over the edge was, I think recently it came out that there were some emails that were not supplied to, like, Daryl Issa's committee or something like that, and so they got really mad about it, and probably on some level, rightly so.
Sure.
I mean, I'm sure the emails didn't show anything, and
right.
it still
just
is sort
dumb
of,
emails,
like, obviously it wasn't that big of a deal, because it would have
there were certainly some emails in the world that
it would have caused
them.
Some sort of outrage, but, like,
right.
So then everybody was just sort of, like, mad that they feel like that they are being
lied
off,
to,
basically. Right, exactly. So that's sort of, like, how we got to this place.
Right.
But he didn't initially want to do it, and apparently, you know, the three, like, high-ranking Republicans who are on the House Intelligence and the Armed Services and the Government Reform Committees, like, didn't want to do the Select Committee, because they're basically concerned that if they don't find anything, then they're just on their third sort of, you know...
They look like loons.
They're crazy. Yeah, exactly. As the Daily Beast put it, tin-hatted, obsessive loons.
No. The Daily Beast and I think alike.
Yeah.
Or it's just very obvious that you would look like a loon in this situation.
Right, and then if they do find something, then it's sort of like, well, how did they find something when...
Right. How incompetent was Daryl Issa's committee, Daryl right. Issa's investigation?
Yeah, exactly.
Or all of the other investigations we've been forced to
yeah.
endure.
So it'll sort of be interesting to see how it all plays out. They still don't know what they're even going to look for. They've just started it. They asked Trey Gowdy what he was going to look into, and he sort of was, like, vague about it. And then Representative Jim Jordan, who was going to be one of the seven people on there, said, direct quote here, he said, the panel is going to focus on the before, the during, and the after of the attack.
That's a great plan.
So they're really going to figure it all out.
Right.
Every start at the beginning. A very good place to start.
Right.
And they're
going
to go
end
from
at
there.
The end.
Yep. And whatever happens in between.
That's the middle.
That's the middle. That's the during.
That's
yeah,
the during.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oops.
No, it's one of the wise.
They have a plan.
They have a plan. They're people with a plan. And I'm glad to hear that. Because so if you had asked me whether they had a plan.
No.
Even that much of a plan, I would have definitely said no.
Yeah. I might have guessed that they were going to start in the middle.
I certainly would have guessed that they were going to start at the end, which is where they've started the entire thing. Because the end is where all of the theorizing about craziness started, and the beginning and the middle were never really discussed.
Right. So, my guess is that they will never get quite to the after, because the after is where they'll realize that the before and the during
were not controversial.
Really that controversial. Right.
So true.
Yeah.
So. Meanwhile, if you hadn't thought about 9/11 recently, you've had
yeah.
a good opportunity to this month, because now the 9/11 museum is finally open
after
over a decade.
I know.
I remember when that museum, because you could look into the museum when if you like go visit the World Trade Center site where they have those big like giant fountains or whatever.
Fountains, yeah.
So you could look into it and sort of like see like vague under construction 9/11 debris.
Yeah,
which is creepy, by the way.
Yeah,
like don't do that.
Well,
and now we just have another thing that's going to be a thing.
I know, and I guess, like, I on some level, I get that you, why you do something like this, and certainly, but, I mean, I don't, a museum, I don't know.
I certainly don't want to visit that museum.
I don't want to go to that museum either. Like, I just, maybe, you know, generations from now, like, to sort of, like, remember how terrible it was, I guess, is just sort of, like, a moment in history.
I mean, they have Holocaust museums, but...
Right, exactly.
The Holocaust Museum is sort of about teaching humans about human behavior.
Right.
The 9/11 Museum is just a really disgusting depressing reminder of, like, this sort of, like, disgusting thing that happened that was terrifying.
Right.
Meanwhile, in other 9/11 news, Gail Brewer, who's the new Manhattan Borough president, has been going around trying to set up a memorial to the living victims of 9/11.
Oh.
Which is a thing that that's we both... You. That's Yeah, that's us. That's a thing that we all agree is, like, hilariously political in nature and, like, not a thing you normally do. But we're sort of into it because it's a good time to go to press conferences mm-hmm. and talk about it.
Yeah.
And we're, you know, pretty soon there's going to be... We're going to have to re-up the 9/11 health bill, and that's going to be a big fight. So this is a good sort of, like, some pre-PR to do. Yeah. But it's, like, a really, like, bizarre thing to have hitched her star to. But I guess it's... I mean, it's probably time to coincide with this museum opening.
Yeah, probably so. Yeah.
A museum... It's like, don't go to this museum. This sounds like a terrible museum to go to.
I know.
The Met is in New York City also. That's a lovely museum. The Museum of Natural History is super fun.
Yeah.
Those are both great museums to go. You know, I've the Whitney is lovely.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been to the Frick Collection, but I hear it's great. It's in an old mansion.
Yeah.
There's so many museums. Yeah. There's no reason.
Yeah.
No reason.
The quote that Obama had was a little weird to me. I guess I sort of get where he was. I don't get where he was
going.
No, you
don't worry.
I was going
to
try
There's nothing to get
anyway,
here.
Anyway, but he said, and this was it, because he did the dedication and all of the, you know, people
Everyone
were
was there.
Michelle was there and Hillary Clinton and both the Clintons were there and probably Joe Biden. Oh, Andrew Cuomo, Michael Bloomberg, Giuliani, blah,
everyone.
Blah, blah. I wonder if Bush was there.
No, probably.
Oh, did you know his dog died? Did you see that?
Oh, what a tragedy.
I know, I do actually, I feel bad about that.
Well, that's the saddest thing, the saddest death the Bush family could produce.
It's terrible, but it's true. It's true. Anyway, so Obama said, "It's an honor for us to join you in your memories, to recall and to reflect, and above all, to reaffirm the true spirit of 9/11. Love, compassion, sacrifice, and to enshrine it forever in the heart of our nation."
I would guarantee that a museum filled with, like, mangled fire trucks is not teaching us much about the true spirit of love or compassion.
Right. Potentially it's sacrifice.
Certainly sacrifice.
It was just such a... I guess it was weird. I don't know. It just felt... It felt off to
me. You know what it felt like to me? You're going to love this. Remember when I started giggling during your concert at that church?
Uh-huh.
Because...
You missed one yesterday, by the way.
Did I?
There was a prayer that I think was...
Maybe went in a direction.
It was... I think you'd have managed.
No, okay.
It wasn't as crazy as what I know you're talking
about.
That
went in a direction where he just started arbitrarily talking about love and, you know, like, love and sacrifice. Like, he started just saying words at a certain point that were, like, where he, like, took something that was, like, Christ dying and then turned it into, like, an expression of love. And I, like, so lost his train of thought because I was, like, well, that doesn't sound like the right thing. Like, as a person who's not, like, sort of in tune with the metaphor,
right,
you know, the symbolism of
right,
this
exactly.
situation, like, that's a crazy sentence to have said. If Brent didn't laugh because he's heard people make crazy turns like this before, because he sort of understood the symbolism of what this guy was saying. As a person who is not sort of, like, you know, fully kind of, like, you know, familiar with what, you know, church symbolism, like, the turn that he made in conversation was so legitimately crazy that he just started sounding like he was talking about love and, you know, sacrifice for no reason.
Right.
And that's what this sounds like to me.
It is.
It's sort of like, la-di-da-di-da, sentence, sentence, sentence. Love,
words,
compassion,
words,
sacrifice, words.
Yeah.
And then it just sort of, like, goes on from there. Like, it just doesn't, it's like, we can just, everything is about love and compassion, isn't it? Everything. The worst event, the worst attack on American soil since Pearl Harbor is about love and compassion. Because you can just say love and compassion anytime in a sentence. It doesn't matter. Like, it's crazy. And maybe, I sort of, as, when I first read that, I had sort of, like, a thought that maybe, like, the same way that everyone in that room at that concert nodded along with that pastor, like, most of America
was
like,
was in there.
Yeah. But it's because they've all been to church, so they all heard a conversation go in this weird direction a million times. It was just such, it was a moment that I thought about that experience. I feel like that experience really broadened my horizons in a way that was disturbing, but also maybe, you know, important in the long run.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I insisted on putting this one international story on the list. I'm sure Brent doesn't care about this at all.
No, it was really funny, though, because I started pulling things, and then I knew that you were out, like, running errands and going skating today, and then I got home, and I saw that you put some things on there, and I saw this, and I was like, she can handle that one.
This is only interesting to me.
No, it's interesting.
It's interesting only because... So I... did a semester of, like, I did my, like, study abroad semester in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I thought was weird about Vietnam was I went there thinking that everyone would hate Americans because of the Vietnam War. And they, like, were sort of into Americans because at the time they were trying to, you know, join the World Trade Organization.
Yeah.
They were trying to sort of, like, open up their economy to foreign investment, and America was one of the partners they were looking for in that endeavor. And so they really were into hating the French because of colonialism. And they were super into hating the Chinese because that's just traditionally who you hate if you are a Vietnamese person.
Uh-huh. Sure.
So, and recently China and Vietnam have been having some sort of like tensions over South China Sea, you know, stuff. Sure. Because, so the Chinese put this oil rig in contested waters, knowing that these waters were contested, P.S.
Because
the Chinese are sneaky that way.
Yeah.
They're not taking shit from anyone. There's like a billion of them. They don't care.
Right.
And then the Vietnamese, who rarely do this, like literally had like a riot, like a full-scale riot.
Oh my God. Because
of that, China is now claiming that the escalating tensions are Vietnam's fault, when in fact China spurred the whole thing by putting this damn rig here.
Yeah.
But in any case, the authorities were caught totally by surprise. Vietnam is not a place where they have a lot of these kinds of riots. If you go there, you sort of understand why. It's a collectivist
culture.
They
really hate the Chinese, huh?
They really hate them. I was like, I don't know why anyone is so surprised by this, because like telling someone that they look Chinese in Vietnam is like the ultimate insult.
Really?
It's like telling someone in Nazi Germany that they look like a Jew. Like, it's just like not, it's like the sort of, you know, there have been tensions for like 1,000 years between China and Vietnam, and a lot of it has to do with territorial things. And so the Chinese are sort of viewed as greedy because the Vietnamese see them as these people that are like stealing territory from them. And there's also like, there was, you know, there's a lot of like Chinese sort of like merchant class type people in Vietnam.
Okay.
A lot of Chinese people own things. Now that the economy is sort of like opening up, as you might imagine, if you live next to one of the world's major economic superpowers, that's one of the things that will happen. But because of that, the Chinese are not beloved in Vietnam.
Yeah.
So Vietnamese feel like the Chinese are bullies. And so the Chinese know this, and obviously were sort of like not caring about
that. So they figured they'd just go
with
it.
So they figured they were just like, fuck it. Yeah, we'll just put this fucking oil rig here. We don't give a shit. But in Hanoi, things got really, really out of hand, which I never saw so much as like a moment of discontent for the entire time that I was there.
Yeah.
One of the things that, you know, you generally can count on in a sort of post-communist nation is that people are fairly behaved.
Right, exactly.
They generally only go to protests that are government-sponsored.
They've been conditioned.
They've been conditioned to be that way, and especially in Hanoi, where the government sort of, like, seat of power is. In Saigon, like, no one knows what's going on in Ho Chi Minh City. Like, anything could be happening there. It's sort of like, someone once described that to me as the South Beach of Vietnam. Like, it's warmer there. People are wearing more bathing suits. Like, a lot is happening over there. It was also the, you know, during the Vietnam War, that was where all the Americans were hanging out.
That's right.
It's a lot more sort of like open. But Hanoi is a lot more interesting because that's where all the weird things that happen in Vietnam happen. And so these were riots in Hanoi, and they injured like 140 people, and they were like, you know, torching cars and like, and they ended up torching a lot of businesses or targeting a lot of businesses that were owned by like
Chinese.
Owned by like Koreans and Taiwanese, like anyone who was vaguely Asian but was not
not Vietnamese.
Singaporean business, you know, and these were all sort of like people that they associate with the Chinese, I guess. Like Taiwanese and Singaporean people. Like, I get where that was coming from.
Yeah.
Koreans, I think maybe they just got off track. I don't know. Not sure what that's about. But there is a sort of perception there that those countries are investing in Vietnam and taking advantage, like exploiting Vietnamese labor, because Vietnamese labor is very cheap there, and it's not awesome to work for the Chinese firms.
That's sort of
like a perception there. But the Vietnamese authorities are like losing their shit because they have gone through a lot.
Well, they probably don't know what to do.
They don't know what to do. I mean, they know what to do. They've cracked down before. They're not afraid to do that. But they don't know what to do because this is sort of like new territory in the sense that they now have to sort of like stoke the fears of all these foreign investors. You know, it's only been in the last decade that they've really been open to foreign investment the way that they have been. And they've been really working at kind of like joining the sort of international, you know, community economically. And so they have, I think, more than any kind of like post-communist nation, really tried to kind of, because they're not in a position like Russia or China to be like a superpower. You know, they're more of a Cuba. Yeah, they're like a country that does stuff, you know, that whatever.
the country that does.
Yeah, like they're just sort of like a general country. Yeah. So they're not in a position to sort of like modernize their economy from a position of power.
Right.
So they're, you know, they have never really liked the Chinese, but they for a while were part of this sort of like communist bloc with them.
Yeah.
They've had to like sort of take a lot of hits in opening up their economy from these other nations that are also modernizing their economy, but they're having to do it all as the victim, basically. Like, only the Vietnamese elite are making money out of this proposition. Everyone else is just getting screwed because labor is cheap over there.
Right.
So, it's sort of an interesting situation. Yep. I'm going to keep my eye on it because when I read Vietnamese riot, I was like, what?
Right.
Like, if someone had told me that there was a Thai riot going on. There's, like, always a riot happening in Thailand. So, like, that's whatever. Everyone knows that that's a possibility. But, like, you know, a Vietnamese
not
riot,
Vietnam.
You're not hearing a lot about that.
Yeah.
For a reason.
Interesting.
So, in any case, it was an interesting story. We're going to keep our eyes on it, despite the fact that we don't normally keep our eyes on anything outside of...
We can do whatever we want.
We can do anything we want. It's a free country.
Yeah, exactly. Back to domestic business here. Harry Reid really going for it with a completely ridiculous idea. That's a good idea. It's a good idea... Ridiculous that, in the sense that it's
that he thinks it,
no
it's
chance
possible,
in hell.
Right.
But I don't think that
well,
he actually
knows
thinks
it's not
that.
Possible,
he knows. He's not dumb.
Right.
But anyway, he wants to amend the Constitution to, which would, in a way, to allow Congress and the states to limit fundraising and spending on federal campaigns and give lawmakers the ability to regulate outside groups.
Yeah.
So basically, he wants to sort of.
Wants
you know,
to uncitizen united to, the right. Citizen United
exactly.
ruling.
So, and. They're going to vote on it in the Senate Judiciary Committee on June 3rd. It'll probably pass the Judiciary Committee because that's Democrat controlled in the Senate.
Right.
And then they'll vote on it at some point in July, which is going nowhere
fast. It needs a two-thirds majority.
It needs 67 because it's an amendment to the Constitution. So it's like, it's not happening. Like, John McCain has already said he's not going to vote on it. Like, he's a person who is sort of, I mean, we have... You know, his name is on the last campaign finance bill we had. So, like, once he's not voting on it as a Republican, you sort of don't have any prayer.
You know some
but,
things.
I mean, it's probably a good it's a good election year strategy because everybody's so fed up with the amount of money in it. And, like, since it is the election year, you may as well at least sort of pretend like you're trying to deal with this.
Well, and I think I've thought this for a long time. I feel like, you know, currently in a situation in which it is impossible to pass anything.
Yeah.
So, like, everyone is wasting their time anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, if the Republicans are going to waste their time, like, fucking trying to defund Obamacare a million times and looking into Benghazi, why can't we waste our time trying to pass bills like this?
Once nobody's doing anything. Like, let's
take advantage of
seriously.
It.
Seriously. Like,
have on your record that you sponsored a bill to limit campaign, you know, campaign finance spending. Like,
totally.
Why not? Do
yeah.
it. And it, what it, I mean, it'll at least help us talk about the issue, because that's ultimately what they need. And I don't know why, like, Republicans on the far right get so into this unlimited spending idea. I know that the Tea Party sort of has this strategy of raising a lot of money from, you know, corporate groups and stuff like that in the shadows. But, like, ultimately, this doesn't, like, really help them, I feel like, as much as they think it does.
I don't think it does either, and this is
I think
the thing that I...
reasonable people are now giving money to Democrats. Like, Wall Street doesn't think the Republicans can be trusted with the economy.
No.
Like, well, they're not trying to be involved in that nonsense.
And that's the thing that I think is so... You know, there's some... And there's a lot... You know, the Democrats don't have a ton of problems raising a lot of money either.
No.
And that's the thing that I think... It was really interesting. I was talking to you about how I really just blew through Elizabeth Warren's book. Like, the fastest, I think, that I've probably
you
ever
read, it in
read
a week.
Anything. I read it in a week, and maybe we haven't talked about how slow I read, because we haven't had reason to on the podcast. I read really slow.
Right.
I just powered right through that. But, you know, she talked a lot about money in politics, and when she was running against Scott Brown, she actually sort of said mostly nice things about Scott Brown, other than the whole sort of, like, when Native American debacle, where he really went after. But they signed the People's Pledge in that race, which I had forgotten about, but they... Because early in the race, Carl Crossroads ran a really negative thing about Elizabeth Warren before she even had the nomination for the Democrats. And the League of Conservation Voters ran something really nasty about Scott Brown because, like, he had just voted on something that was, you know, they didn't like, basically.
Right.
So initially, they signed this thing where they were like, no outside money, and if any outside money comes in on your behalf and does anything, then however much money they spent, your campaign has to give half that amount of money to a charity of the other person's choice. And there was not a dime of outside money in that race. And they both stuck to it. And the reason that she was like, I fully expected when I started pulling away at the end that he would sort of like go in on it and call up Karl Rove. And he never did. He won't sign it in New Hampshire because Jane Shaheen has asked him to. So he probably figures
he's
that he can.
He's learned his lesson.
Yeah. But, you know, the fact that there was, you know, I mean, there was an outside group that was bothersome enough to Scott Brown to make him sign the People's Pledge.
Exactly.
Because because the League of Conservation Voters is not poor either. I realize they're not the Koch brothers.
No.
But I mean, but there are...
Here's the thing, the
amount of money in politics should be terrifying to everyone.
Exactly. It is all ultimately about media buys and what's effective as, like, sort of PR. And the Democrats have a much better grasp at this moment, and I don't understand why, because... The GOP used to be like a PR machine.
Right.
But the Democrats currently have a much better grasp on how to reach voters and what messages will resonate with them. So they don't need as much money to get as many votes.
Well, it's true.
More people are just interested in the Democrats.
Right. Well, so, and more people want to vote for Democrats.
Exactly. The Democrats' real issue is getting out the vote. It's not really convincing people to vote for them. And that's not the case with the Republicans. So it should be terrifying to most run-of-the-mill Republicans who are not just, like, in bed with Wall Street. Because it doesn't... I mean, the Tea Party doesn't have an interest in campaign finance reform because no one would be spending money on them if it weren't for, like, these big Koch brother-type organizations. Yeah. Well, but most reasonable Republicans should be having a problem
with this. Well, and the other reason that they should be fearing Wall Street money entering a race is the last time that we had Hillary Pillory on here,
it was about how
Wall Street is going to fund Hillary. So maybe they should just all vote for this with Harry Reid to make sure Wall Street doesn't buy Hillary Clinton the election in 2016.
I mean, it's just becoming so foolish on their part to not see the writing on the wall about campaign finance reform, because it doesn't benefit anyone in the long run.
No.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to communism. Right. A crazy thing, a good omen, but a crazy thing is happening in Florida.
Yeah.
We know Charlie Crist is re-running for governor there.
Yeah, as a Democrat.
As a Democrat this time. He's just running whatever party suits him at the moment. But one of the things he's doing while running as a Democrat is coming out against the Cuba embargo, which is, in Florida, real controversial.
Yeah.
That's a real move. That's a real statement. He's saying some stuff.
It is. Yep.
He went to Cuba and sort of saw that it's a complete waste of everyone's time and resources, which it is. And I think that Florida is, like, ready for this business to end, because the generation that was so obsessed with keeping everyone out of Cuba is dying off, and their children have never been to Cuba, so it doesn't matter to them if we're embargoing Cuba, because they have never met their fucking families, because, you know, they couldn't go back there. Or if they did go back there, they just found that their families were living on a tropical island, like many other tropical islands, and were eating kind of shitty food. So, you know, whatever. But it's sort of interesting to me that this is even a possibility in 2014.
Well, and it's interesting that he's, like you said, saying it in his campaign. I think on some level he probably thinks that he can get away with it because everyone's general hatred of Rick Scott is
just, like, so insanely at an all-time high.
So he can, you know... He can,
but this, I mean, I think he also is sort of doing this to kind of, like, buy some points with the Democratic voters in Florida, because obviously they shouldn't trust him, obviously, because he's a party switcher.
I know.
He's not actually a Democrat.
Right.
And so I think he's
a better option than Rick Scott.
He's certainly.
Because he's a wacko.
Because Rick Scott's a crazy person. Yeah. But I think that he's saying stuff like this to sort of, like, buy some, you know, some calm from the Democrats.
Yeah.
Because they're probably not thrilled that he's their candidate.
Right.
Maybe they are. I don't know what's going on in Florida. I couldn't tell you.
They might. Maybe those Dems, they're like him. Who knows?
Nobody knows what's happening there.
Yeah.
They're certainly not letting most of their Democrats vote. So it doesn't matter what happens.
I know. Yeah. Oh my gosh. We got some gay marriage
news
this
week. It's like gay marriage city.
In further proof that what Lyle and I have been saying for years now is accurate, we've got some more state laws being overturned. Yeah. We have been saying forever
if you don't want gay marriage in your state, don't pass a law banning it.
Don't do anything.
Just stay where you are.
Stop. Stop yourself. Pull back.
Don't say a word.
Don't put a referendum on the ballot. Nope. Do not vote on it in your state legislature.
Don't allow anyone in the state to say gay marriage, because that is the first way that you'll get gay marriage in your state.
Right. Because we've got two states
that do not want gay marriage.
No. Arkansas, which passed a ban, I think, in like 2004. Yeah. Idaho, within the last 10 years, has also passed a ban on gay marriage.
Neither have them anymore.
don't have the bans. The bans are unconstitutional anymore because some district court and federal and circuit court judges struck down the bans in both of those places.
Yeah. Now, as you would, right, because they're unconstitutional.
Right, which we've found because now even the Supreme Court has weighed in on this. Exactly. So, like, once you have a ban on it, you're like, sort of just, fucked.
Yeah.
But anyway, they're both on hold because appeals courts, I think, sort of, like, you know, did whatever they did. So they're not happening right now. Although 450 couples did get married in Arkansas. Yeah, in Arkansas,
they didn't initially put a hold on it.
That's 900 gay people in Arkansas.
In Arkansas.
Come on.
Like, what are they doing there?
Just, I don't know.
Don't be in Arkansas. There's so many better places to live as a person.
I know.
And if you were a gay person, then you had the additional issue of being gay in Arkansas, which can't be fun.
I know.
So, like, go somewhere else. Anyway, I mean, it's hard because none of the surrounding states are, like, super awesome.
Right, I know. So, but you have to stay in the... You have to leave the region.
Right. Yeah. That's a problem, because maybe they're gay people that just feel very strong about their southern roots.
Maybe.
Maybe they're bigoted gay people.
They might be.
They probably are, because probably, it's...
They're racist.
They
waving
women.
Confederate flags. Right.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know what's going on with the gays in Arkansas.
They hate women.
I mean, that's... fair enough. But these could... I mean, they could be horrible gays. Maybe we don't want them. But it's surprising that... Before the stay was issued, 450 gays in Arkansas.
Did, like, every gay person just go find a stranger to marry?
They were just like, let's get married now, just in case.
God.
It's scary.
I know, I worry about that. I worry about the first batch of...
gay weddings?
Gay divorces.
Oh, gay divorces.
As proof that gays shouldn't be getting married, even though
the divorce rate is 50%.
Right. Exactly, yeah.
Straight people?
Yeah, as soon as anyone gets a divorce, it's always like, ha-ha!
Showed him.
Yep.
Yeah. But anyway. No.
But speaking of Idaho,
this week it's doing its part. Currently, really it hadn't been doing its part for years because of it being one of the more boring states out there.
Yeah. So they're having a Republican primary for governor right now. Right. They have a sitting governor who did probably the smartest thing that he's ever done.
Yeah.
He sort of is your, like, mainline Republican
general
dude.
Northern states Republican.
He's got some challengers. He's got three challengers, and he apparently said that he wasn't going to go to a debate unless all three of the challengers were there. Yeah. Now, the three challengers are... so his name is...
Butch Otter.
Yeah,
so that's
exactly.
Already starting.
And the next guy...
It gets funnier from there. Like, that's the lowest point of funny.
Right, exactly. So the other... So he's the establishment candidate. The next craziest is the Tea Party guy who is... His name is Russ Felcher.
Right.
Now, that's another term that's a, sort of like a... disgusting term, Felcher. If you don't know what it is, then look it up. But anyway, he has a funny name.
He has a funny
too,
name
for a subset of people who know what felching is.
Okay.
Okay.
He's a Republican state senator,
and he's a Tea Party.
And he was the only other person to wear a suit to the debate.
Right. Yes. Now the next two, we have Harley Brown, who, as his name suggests, is a biker. He's sort of obese. he's sort of like this anarchist. Kind of, you know, government-hating biker. He was wearing his leather biker gear to the debate. He was wearing a leather hat at the debate.
Yeah.
He had two cigars in his breast pocket at the debate. And he sort of is known for... Oh, he has about half his teeth.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Not...
If even.
His tooth situation was not ideal.
Yeah. So, and he has, like, a lot of fun catchphrases, like, register communists, not firearms.
Yeah.
Okay, so
and at one point,
there.
He seemed to do a spin in the middle of the debate.
Yeah, he was
he did, like,
he
a dramatic
around.
Turn.
Yeah, we couldn't tell why, actually. We only watched the highlights. We didn't watch the whole thing. It was an hour long. We couldn't be bothered.
No.
But, and then the fourth guy, his name is Walt Bayes. He sort of is, like, this Old West kind of, like, sovereignty,
old
you know.
Old West.
Old. Very Old West. Like, like, old and senile. He's got, like,
a
this giant
beard.
He's sort of got, like, a almost like a Duck Dynasty style, like, big, like, bushy beard.
You can imagine, like, a doddering Duck Dynasty person.
He was wearing, like, these, like, big glasses and also sort of, like, a tan cowboy button-up Western shirt, sort of. and he claims to have been thrown in jail for his religious beliefs. I don't know what that means. He's a Bible, or he's a homeschool advocate.
Yes.
Big Bible advocate. He was taking... folded up Bible pages and reading from them throughout the debate.
Brought some Bible notes with him, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the Idaho Public Television put it on a 30-second delay because they knew that they were going to have to deal with some
situations.
Potential issues going on here. So they knew what was going on.
Yeah.
But anyway, the sitting governor was like, I'm only going to debate if everybody's there. And he basically just didn't say a word because he was like, I just need to be seen on the stage with the three other craziest people in the state. It's like and when then New York State had way to re-election.
Major governor, the gubernatorial debate for the
right. And you had the, it was like the every, rent is too damn high party. Yeah, and that, yeah, exactly.
That's and Cuomo just didn't say anything. Cuomo was a Republican basically in the debate, but didn't have to say anything because he was just hanging out.
Yeah, but they also talked about. I mean, they talked about a lot of crazy things. They talked about. I think they were talking about like you know they were talking they. They were talking about hunting, and I think they were probably something talking everyone about guns, can get behind. I guess. Right, exactly.
In Idaho.
And so Walt Bayes, who was the
Bible belter. The Bible thumper.
Right, the Bible thumper. Claimed to have shot an endangered species of wolf.
Right.
While it was on the endangered species
freedom,
list.
My just friends. Freedom.
That's it. Yeah. You shouldn't... The feds can't be telling him who he can and cannot shoot on the land. Yeah, anyway... and then Brown claimed that he was as politically correct as the proverbial turd in the punch bowl.
Mm-hmm.
He was quoted as saying that. And then when asked about taxes, I think this was Brown, actually, because I saw this answer someplace. They asked him about taxes. And his answer was, this is a little long-winded, as you may imagine. He wasn't able to make a quick point about this. But he said, the key is getting our land back from the feds, which doesn't have anything to do with taxes. And here's my plan of attack. The three best men for the mission are myself as governor, because I've got a master's in raising hell. And then he doesn't say who the other people are. Right. But here's my plan of attack, okay? You go in there and you use spiritual warfare.
Mm.
Oh, against taxes. Everybody talks about the natural, but I want to talk about the other realm we exist in. You bind those evil spirits that are behind the feds with the blood of Jesus, the name of Jesus, and the power of entombment of the Holy Spirit, the power of agreement, the word of God. Take air superiority and then roll in with your tanks on the ground. Blitzkrieg! And then the moderator interrupted and said, Mr. Brown, the question was about taxes. Yeah, he also claimed that he was called by God during a low point in his life to be the commander-in-chief, and then immediately said, don't think I'm crazy, because I'm not. Like, okay, you can't say that after. You just said something crazy. That's not what
you
do.
Well, you just can't say that. Mm. If you have to say that, you have already, you are crazy. Like, once you've had to make that comment, you've already done
it. Yeah, and Bayes has run for things before, just as sort of like, you know, the crazy candidate. And he sort of, he does it a lot of times to make sure that there's an anti-abortion candidate, because he's the big Bible crazy person. And he said that, he said, if the Supreme Court goes to hell, I'm not following them. Meanwhile, the suited people were just
hanging out. The Tea Partier didn't have any fun lines.
No.
He looked like a generic suit, just hanging out, chuckling. Him and Butch Otter were, like, chuckling with each other about what was going on.
Well, and so were the moderators were,
too. Yeah,
the
moderators. The expressions the moderators were making were hilarious.
It's really good. There's a few clips in various places that have just, like, 2-3 minute, like, highlights of things. Right. I highly suggest that you watch them, because it's
really important.
Worth your time.
Yeah.
For sure. But anyway, no, Idaho.
It's a real thing that happened in Idaho.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
Oh, boy.
Meanwhile, we're still dealing with the fallout of the Donald Sterling situation.
We don't have to talk about this for that long, but it was...
Well, we don't care that much.
It was news this week, because Donald Sterling had his sort of, like, official apology when he went on with Anderson Cooper. I think it was on Monday night.
Yeah.
And he sort of...
They should stop allowing him to apologize.
Right, exactly. there was an episode of, I know you don't watch this, but The Good Wife last week had this, like really rich... It was... not based on this, but it was so appropriate. I mean, because they had this, like, super rich guy who, like, had fired someone, like, for... I can't remember, but, like, for a reason that they shouldn't have been fired for, basically. It wasn't because either they were a woman or something. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was, like, unnecessarily fired someone.
Right.
And he kept, like, going out into the news, and every time that he was on the television, he would say something completely ridiculous, and, like, all of the lawyers on, like, either side were either, like... or like yes, he just said something completely ridiculous, you know. And like, this is
That's what Donald Sterling is up to,
because he went on and sort of like went to go ask for forgiveness, and then accidentally, probably not accidentally, but railed for a pretty decent amount of time
against
about
Magic Johnson,
and who, him by the way, AIDS.
Everybody loves. Nobody doesn't love Magic Johnson.
Exactly. But Magic Johnson was the one who his wife, or no, his girlfriend was photographed with, and then he went on the tirade about. So, obviously, his name came up, so Anderson Cooper asked him about it, and he said, what has he done? Can you tell me, Big Magic Johnson, what's he done? He's got AIDS. Did he do any business? Did he help anybody in South LA? My guess is probably so, actually. Yeah. Yes.
Well, anyway. His admission to having AIDS actually was like one of the major turning points in the AIDS epidemic. Yeah, it's true. So.
He said, what kind of guy goes to every city, has sex with every girl, then goes and catches HIV? Is that someone we want to respect and tell our kids about? I think he should be ashamed of himself. I think he should go into the background. And what does he do for black people? He hasn't done anything.
Hmm.
So there you go.
Strong words. Donald Sterling, expert on who's done what for black people.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
Also, owner of a basketball team who wants to know what kind of guy goes to every city and has sex with every girl.
The entire NBA. Right, all of the people.
All of the people.
Yeah.
In the sport, in your chosen sport.
That's what they do.
That's what all of the people are doing. So, yeah. Everyone is the answer.
It's one of the reasons you want to get into the NBA. Exactly. Let's be honest.
No, yeah. It's fun to play basketball, I'm sure. But it's more fun to be able to have sex with anyone you want.
That's it.
So.
You're made.
Done.
That's it.
In any case, his fine is due this week. His $2.5 million fine.
And he hasn't paid it yet.
No, and he's not going to.
No.
Instead, he's going to get everything tied up in litigation. And
right, he's going to sue the NBA. But the interesting thing is though, because there's apparently a couple ways that he can be ousted. So they did this fine. To be totally ousted, like 75% of like the other owners
have to
like vote against it. Supposedly they're going to be voting on that pretty soon.
Yeah.
But the other way is that within 30 days, if he doesn't pay this fine, then he could just sort of be stripped of his
ownership
at that point. So, but he has claimed that now he hasn't been given due process.
Mm.
So now he's going to just sue, but he's going to, you know, counter sue the NBA basically.
He should sell the team, get out of the press, and move on with his life.
Well,
because every time that he tries to defend himself, he digs himself in deeper. And even if he believes that the original charge was insane, and maybe it was, he's not a nice guy. He's a racist asshole.
Right.
But like maybe that was just sort of like a viral moment that got overblown. Who knows? Doesn't help, though, if now, since then, he's been quoted as saying a zillion insensitive things.
Well, and he stands to make
so much money.
Because I think I read somewhere, he bought the team for like $12.5 million. And
yeah,
he's been the owner for ages. I mean, he's 80, and he's been the owner for as long as...
Yeah.
I mean, the Clippers is sort of one of the younger teams in the NBA. And I don't know how many like dollars that is in sort of like today's money, but I think that it's worth almost $600 million.
Yeah.
I mean...
No, it's a huge... payoff.
Yeah, exactly. So just fucking tell it. Also, you're 80. Just like go, I don't know, die or
right.
something. I mean,
just
like whatever 80-year-olds
leave
do. I mean,
us.
Just, yeah.
Leave LA.
Oh, God.
Stop being an asshole landlord.
Yeah.
Like.
Totally.
That's the other thing that I feel like he's maybe misunderstood on his attempt to go on like a goodwill tour of America.
It's right.
Like,
nobody likes him anyway.
Nobody likes him anyway. He's
nobody
an asshole.
Nobody liked him before he was a racist.
There's a
reason. Talking about Magic Johnson having AIDS.
There's a reason that that comment struck a chord with so many people to the degree that it, like, lit a fire
right.
under...
At least in Los Angeles, everybody was waiting for something like that.
Yes. No one likes him here.
Right.
And so he was already... Like, that kind of comment is what you need someone, like, in his position to say.
Right.
Because then you're like, aha! We've got it now. Like,
yeah.
And now he's made, like, 1,000 of those comments. So now, even if he wants to go and claim that first comment was just like a moment that he was caught off guard and he said, you know, was taken out of context or whatever you would say about one comment.
Yeah.
He can't take it back now because now he's talking. Now he's, you know, right. hating on Magic Johnson. Don't do that. That's a crazy thing to do.
I know. Totally.
Don't.
Yeah.
That's madness.
Oh, God. Case. This is a great story.
Yes.
I love this story. This might be my favorite one.
One of the great ones.
So there's this group that's called Operation American Spring. And they are sort of, like, of the ilk of the sort of Clive and Bundy situation. The sort of, like, they're the real anti-government, but beyond even sort of, like, what the Tea Party is. They're the real sort
they're
of,
militant
like...
They're basically,
like, don't believe that the federal government sort of, like, even exists. They hate everyone. They hate Obama. They hate John Boehner. They hate... I mean, they really just... Their hatred really knows
no ends.
So, and on their website... I went to their website myself.
You're going to get...
I know. God knows what's going
to
happen.
The feds are
going to
investigate you now.
Anyway, but it says the group exists to form the restoration of constitutional government, rule of law, freedom, liberty of the people, by the people, for the people, from despotic and tyrannical federal leadership. A lot of those, up until the very end, was just sort of like a list of words.
Right,
I don't know if you noticed that.
No, they were quoting the Constitution, or the Declaration of Independence, or whatever.
So, but on their website, they also have a link to their own articles of impeachment that they have, that, you know,
yes.
that we could just use if we wanted to, you know, to for impeachment. And they also have a 3-phase plan to sort of like meet their end, their basically goal. And phase one is to field millions, as many as 10 million patriots who will assemble in a peaceful, nonviolent, physically unarmed, parentheses, spiritually constitutionally armed display of unswerving loyalty to the U.S. Constitution and against the incumbent government leadership in Washington, D.C., with the mission to replace with law-abiding leadership. Go full bore, no looking back, steadfast in the mission. Okay, that's phase one. Right. I did not read phase two or phase three because we're not ever going to get to phase two or three.
Well, phase one, by the way, is just to have a rally.
A rally.
If you needed someone to summarize that.
Right, exactly. So the reason that we bring up phase one is because that rally happened.
Yes.
On Friday. And those 10 million people they had expected to come to Washington, D.C. were a couple dozen. So they missed it by almost the full 10 million.
This is a famous problem
amount.
People throwing rallies in D.C. are facing. Right. I've been to many a rally that turned out to only be a few dozen people.
Well, it's another reason why you don't say how many people you're expecting. Correct. Or put the number in what the... Like, don't have a million something march.
Right. Don't say that in the title.
Even if you have 400,000, because that's a lot of people to have marching somewhere.
But it's not going to sound like a lot of people. It's a million mom march.
No, exactly.
And also, you shouldn't say how many people you need. You shouldn't imply that the number of people you've listed is the number you need to reach your goal.
Right, because now you failed.
Because now...
It's phase like two and three amount.
If they had said that with a few dozen people, they could rally... Then they would sound like a huge, resounding success.
Yeah, they did.
But because they were looking for 10 million people, an outrageous amount of people, the fact that they only got a few dozen is a massive failure.
Yeah.
I'm impressed that they got a few dozen people there. This is a crazy idea.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, if they had better PR, they probably, A, could have gotten a few dozen more people there, but B, they maybe wouldn't be in this position, which is now failure. That's the position they're in. They're in a position of failure.
At losing, which is a new thing I've decided that I'm going to start saying, because I said that at work the other day about one of my coworkers. And
perfect.
It's, as I was saying it, I felt like it was
a genius
really
moment.
Worked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like it's a good one.
Winning at losing. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
They are some of the winningest losers out there. Yeah. Yep.
Now we have someone who's losing at winning.
And boom. That's it. You did it. Well, let's just stop. We're not even going to tell you what the last story is. But no, we will, because we have to prove that it was a good segue.
Right.
Because we talked about this a while ago, actually, because when Rush Limbaugh was nominated for this Children's Book Award, which the nominations were by sales. There's, what is it? It's a Children's Choice Book Award.
It's a very dispiriting.
It's a suspect book award, but it's also a big award, basically, too. So the nominees are by sales.
Right.
So that's
like
suspect.
Other people, like Jeff Kinney, who wrote The Diary of the Wimpy Kid.
Right,
the Diary
won of the Wimpy Kid
has won it.
Two,
Rick Riordan has won
right.
it.
Right, and Rick Riordan is the guy who wrote the Percy Jackson books. Veronica Roth, who wrote Divergent, which was, like, a huge movie this year, obviously. So, I mean, like, big authors,
people
basically.
Have won
so that's who he's up against here. The book, as we talked about once before, is Rush Revere and the Brave Pilgrims. The cover has a crazy picture of Rush.
It's recommended that you look it up.
Yes, find it immediately. And but they're voted for, here's the kicker, online.
Mm.
And anybody can vote. Like, there's
right.
no,
Any
you don't have to have a valid email address. You can vote as many times as you want. They aren't checking to make sure that you are actually a kid. They're not making sure that you've read this in any way, shape, or form. Obviously, I mean, there's no way to do that. But, like, I think we can all do the math as to figure out how it was that Rush Limbaugh ultimately won this award with an online vote.
Yeah.
It wasn't because...
His fans aren't busy.
It wasn't because children liked Rush Revere and the Brave Pilgrims more than they liked Divergent.
No.
That's not what happened.
No. No.
It's not.
He has a lot of fans that don't have a lot to do.
That's it. Ding, ding, ding. You figured it out.
Yeah. So, Rush Limbaugh, famed children's author, Rush Limbaugh.
Award-winning children's author,
has done it again for the first time, I guess.
Yep.
He's done it some amount of times. Nobody knows.
Hopefully the last. But losing at winning.
There
it is.
Proof. There it is. We did it.
Proof that was a perfect segue. Yeah. Good work.
We didn't talk about Grey's Anatomy's finale.
Oh, God.
That happened.
Yeah, it did.
Christina Yang is gone, so I'm going to stop watching the show. Brent claims that's a lie.
It's a lie. She claimed that. I'm going to drudge up where she said that last year about this season.
I know. I will say that when Brent's not in town, I don't watch the show. Right. I just let him catch me up whenever he's around about what's happened.
I watched it on vacation, which is upsetting.
It's upsetting.
We had a very full day that day on Thursday
you
and then came home.
Zone
and
out.
We were turned on the TV and watched Hell's Kitchen and Grey's Anatomy. What I do on Thursdays.
Yeah. That's an episode I still haven't seen and will never see. And I feel okay about it.
Yeah. No,
I mean, it was a waste of an episode.
Yeah, don't
worry about it. The show's coming back for the next 500 seasons, so
yeah.
Brent will keep you updated as to what happens.
Yeah.
But Christina Yang was my favorite character.
She was everybody's
favorite. I mean, you had to be an idiot to not
Except during the sort of year-ish time period where they were, where she was no one's favorite character because she was being so terrible.
Yeah, remember there was a year where she was terrible.
Yeah, which wasn't her fault.
No.
I mean,
and she was, when she was interviewed, she said something about the tough years, which were like the second to eighth season. It was like the entire run of the show, basically.
Right. Yeah.
So I know what was going on during all of those years.
Yeah.
And it was not fun for anyone, it turns out. But in any case, we're back now.
Yeah.
We might have another
issue
because I'm going out of town in a few weeks.
Right. Well, and next week on Sunday is the wedding.
Oh, yeah.
We might be doing
a Monday. We might be doing some weird scheduling.
For you, Tuesday, because next week is Memorial Day. If you didn't know that, a lot of people don't. Next week's Memorial Day.
Yeah, a lot of people aren't believing Brent when he tells them that.
I'm telling them, and I keep telling them, but the people are getting confused because there's one more weekend in March, but it's always the last Monday in March.
Yeah.
And next Monday is the last Monday in March.
Exactly.
So, get into
We'll be vacationing 3-day weekend
next week. Get excited.
Yeah. I'm going to a wedding of good friends, and so I'm hosting a lot of friends.
To see Kathy Griffin.
Yeah, Brent is going to Vegas to see Kathy Griffin. But we'll be there later in the week. We're going to be recording once a week.
We're here.
Yeah. We're going to be recording once a week from now on. So stay tuned.
Yes.
We will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.